afternoon and welcome back to Condo Craze and HOAs here on Big Talk 850. I'm Karen Curtis and I'm here again today as we are each Sunday at noon with attorneys Eric Glazer and Scott Shapiro from Glazer and Associates PA, a law firm practicing community association law throughout Florida. As our listeners know, we are here each week to answer all of your calls and emails about the issues that make life in your condominium or HOA absolutely crazy from one minute to the next. As always, we would love to get the phone lines going early, answering all of your questions. So give us a call right here in our studio at 877-850-8585. Again, that's 877-850-8585. Or if you prefer to email us your questions, you can do so by visiting the show's website at condocrazeandhoas.com and by clicking on the Email the Show tab.
And even if you don't want to send us an email, still visit the show's website at condocrazeandhoas.com, where you can listen to all of our past shows. Sign up for our free seminars. We'll talk about the fact that we now have the Hollywood location with a new date and time. You can see who the show's sponsors are and visit all of their websites. You can link to our Facebook page. Link to the brand new HOA and Condo blog. Again, that's at hoa-condoblog.com. You can join our email list and get copies of our newsletters and other announcements that we send out about the show week in and week out. And, of course, if you'd like to call our law firm directly and pick our brains off the air, you can call Glazer & Associates at 855-4-CONDO-CRAZE. Again, that's 855-4-CONDO-CRAZE. And the firm's website is at condo-laws.com. Again, condo-laws.com. And as we mentioned now for the last few weeks, the Community Association Members Party was established to get legislation passed that would help all of you living in community associations throughout the state. And to know exactly what legislation each of you believe should be the top priority, there's now a survey on that website that allows you to specifically tell us what legislation you deem to be the most important. And hundreds of you have already responded to the survey. Just take that survey at www.camp2012.net. and click on the survey button, and when the results are wrapped up, you can rest assured we're going to get those results over to the Florida legislature. So again, that's www.camp2012.net. Click on the survey button. Please participate in this important survey. All right, some housekeeping before we get down to brass tacks. Remember, Florida law now provides that members of a condo board, you have to get certified within 90 days of getting elected to the board, and you can even get certified 1 year before getting elected to the board. As we know, the elections have a way of creeping up on us, and they'll be here soon. One way of getting certified is by taking the Condo Craze Board Member Certification Course, and it's the first course that was written by an attorney and that was approved by the Florida DBPR.
It's one way, but it's the best way. And Eric has now certified over 2,500 Floridians who are now eligible to serve on a Florida Condominium Board of Directors. The course is fun. The course is free. There's food served. You get to ask questions, and you leave with a summary of everything you learned and a certificate.
And if your board is interested in actually getting certified at your condo or in our law office, you can give us a call at Glazer & Associates at 855-4-CONDO-CRAZE, and we can make arrangements to bring the course to you.
All right. Remember, our next seminar is actually, again, coming up. It's at the PM Expo event in Orlando in now only 2 weeks. That's on August 15th. And now we also finally have our date for the next seminar at the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Hollywood, and that date is Thursday, November 8th at 6 o'clock p.m. Again, Hollywood, Thursday, November 8th. 6 o'clock p.m., and if you want to register for either of the seminars in Orlando or Hollywood, just go to the show's website, again, at condocrazeandhoas.com. Fill out the form, and Brian will get back to you confirming your registration. Okay, woke up this morning, actually, to a terrible story, a horrible story about a 67-year-old woman who died in a fire at a Deerfield Beach high-rise condominium, and that fire started in her unit, where I'm guessing there were no sprinkler systems in the condo, and the article certainly did not mention the fact that there were any sprinklers. And I got to tell you, we spoke about this many times on the show before. Condos by now would have been required to have sprinkler systems, not only in the common areas, but in the units. But about 2 years ago, the Florida legislature kind of caved into pressure and extended that deadline to 2019, saying, you know, money was tight and we're in the middle of this foreclosure crisis. Why make people spend money on a sprinkler system? And Governor Crist was originally against that extension because even he said at the time that he would never put safety ahead of money, but eventually he too caved in and signed the bill, extending the time period to comply. And today, it looks like we see the unfortunate and terrible result of that extension. So again, members of the Florida legislature, how about making laws that help the condos make money and get money from, let's say, banks, for example, and not pass laws that jeopardize the safety of the residents. We said that this would happen one day.
You said it before.
And apparently it did happen. And again, today we see the results of that awful extension. So bad way to start off the show, but again, you got to report the news as it comes due.
Happened this morning. Well, last week we spoke about putting missiles on top of condominiums in Britain. Another manager getting caught stealing money from a condominium association, this time in St. Augustine. And we spent the second half of the show discussing that never-ending battle for the right to access the association's official records.
Yeah, and there's no doubt, Karen, that this battle over the records goes on constantly. And as we warn the associations, oftentimes it results in associations being forced to pay a $500 penalty to the owner and all the owner's attorney's fees and costs, and this could be thousands of dollars. Believe me, those damn attorneys can charge a lot of money, Scott, you know? And almost, again, every record of the association could be seen by any unit owner, absent only a very few exceptions. And if your association is unsure as to whether or not an owner is entitled to access a certain record, associations don't ignore the request. That could be a big problem for you later on. At least ask counsel what to do. Don't ignore it. But let's see what the readers of the blog think about access to records. And remember, a new blog blog topic can be found each Monday morning, again, at www.hoa-condoblog.com. Scott, start us off.
Yeah, we got an email here from Domenico, who writes in and says, yes, it is true that some associations make it hard for some members to obtain copies of some records, but I think it comes down to the relationship between both parties and whom is in charge. I live in a small condo, about 28 units, and I am the president of this association, and the relationship between us and the other unit owners is great. Thank you again.
All right. It's funny. You know, one may think that the smaller the association is, the more likely people are to get along and the less of these problems are going to exist. And I'm here to tell you that just isn't so. And, you know, I've been involved in some crazy cases actually with small associations that turn out to be just as crazy, involving cases where there's a 400-unit condominium involved. And in fact, it may even be worse, because in a small condo, it's difficult for people to hide from each other.
Yeah, believe. Exactly.
Yeah.
Mel writes in and says, mediation is always a good idea. Access to financial records, I believe, is the most important thing to unit owners. If a complaint is filed with the Division of Compliance, it takes a long time for the division to make a decision. And if a violation or fine is imposed, all owners have to pay it anyway. Complaint letters are usually posted on a common element for all owners to see. So the requesting owner now faces retribution. Why can't we be friends?
Yeah, I know a radio show that asked that same question. But Mel makes an interesting point. Scott and I have both seen situations where unit owners complain to the division or they file a lawsuit against the association, and some rogue board member puts it on the bulletin board with a note basically saying something like, hey, look what your neighbor is doing. He's now costing all of you money. We now have to hire a lawyer to defend all this. And again, wrong way to go.
Yeah, all right, enough of that. A former HOA president wrote into us and said, as a past president of an HOA, I believe in full transparency of the actions of the board of directors, which would and should include full access to all association records, including the emails of the board when they are communicating on matters pertaining to the respective association. However, the courts have ruled this not to be the case, a ruling which I believe to be a very poor ruling. There simply is no valid reason for the disparity between the two types of associations in the matter of record access and/or penalties, and they should be similarly protected, including an ombudsman for both.
Yeah, I got to tell you, Scott, this is a great comment because it actually raises several good points. At present, board members can sit in their home and email each other all day long about their opinions and the affairs of the association, and those emails, at least not yet, are considered official records of the association. They're not. And it does kind of seem a little ridiculous to me if they're talking about association matters. And then, of course, the point that's made in the email is that it's also ridiculous for HOA members to have to wait longer than condo owners do for access to records and to even pay more money to access those records by getting copies. So I certainly agree with those comments. The statute, again, is broken and definitely needs to be fixed.
Well,
Mr. Lambert writes in, all right, and says, members who are disputing actions of the CAM or board and request to view records, even if the request is submitted correctly and respectfully, are treated with hostility. In most cases, I found the more resistant the manager and the board to allow the review, the more they have to hide. A few members in my association were trying to view the financials and were charged a fee up front for the employee to sit and watch us view the records or pull the records prior to our visit. And again, just like we spoke about last week, the HOA statute allows the association to charge an administrative fee that we were talking about, to any owner who wants to view the records. And some management companies, though, believe that this gives them the right to demand like $150 per hour in advance just to view the records. And again, that's not the intent of the statute, which is really simply to reimburse the association for any out-of-pocket expenses it incurs in allowing that owner the access to the records.
We had a demand a few months ago for $3,500 in advance,
right.
I believe.
Yeah,
let's just tell everybody that didn't that wasn't the case once we informed the proper authorities.
Yeah, the case.
Yeah. Right. And right on cue, Home Sweet Home writes in and says, here is a great horror story, and I quote from a letter I received. Please allow this letter to serve as a formal response from the condominium to view the association records per your request of December 2nd, 2011. We'll make the records you've requested available for review in our office on December 29th, 2011 at 10 a.m. There will be an administrative fee of $150 an hour that you will be charged while a senior manager is present while you go through the association records. You will also only be allowed to have 25 copies made at the rate of 25 cents per copy, unquote. Because of a dispute with them, they also asked that all fees mentioned above to be paid up front. Question is, how do you tame such CAMs who are full of gas, greed, arrogance, and stupidity?
Well, again, as I said, mark my words, a court or the entity that licensed community association managers, they're definitely going to make an example of a manager or a management company that charges these fees to an owner. Believe me, but as you'll see, time will tell. Let's do this. Let's take our first break, and when we get back, we'll talk about what constitutes an attorney-client privileged association record and whether or not that document is an official record that can be seen by the owners. We'll share perhaps the funniest and best email this show has certainly seen so far. And, of course, we'll take more of your calls and emails. 877-850-8585. Again, 877-850-8585. We'll be back right after this.
Condo Craze and HOAs here on Big Talk 850. I'm Karen Curtis with attorneys Eric Glazer and Scott Shapiro from Glazer & Associates. The number to call, give us a call. We want to hear from you. 877-850-8585. 877-850-8585. And by the way, if you have a product or service that would be beneficial to our listeners and want to be a guest on the show, attend our monthly seminars where you'll meet hundreds of different associations, be listed on the show's website, have a commercial spot during each week's show, you can become a sponsor of the show. Just visit the show's website at condocrazeandhoas.com and send us a quick email.
All right, let's talk about, finish up the topic on official records by talking about attorney-client privilege documents. And let's address a real good comment from a reader named Jack who writes in and says, our condominium board and the association council see the attorney-client privilege as eternal. The association was sued by a public adjustment firm for breach of contract based on the board's decision not to pay a remaining $32,000 balance. At the mediation conference that was held, a settlement was reached soon thereafter. The settlement was for $150,000, and no documents or explanations were supplied to account for this huge amount. Three unit owners sought to view the documents after the case was closed and dismissed, but they were denied access based upon the attorney-client privilege. The request included memorandums and letters relating to the depositions taken and the attorney's evaluation of the testimony and of the case for settlement purposes. There was a denial that many of these documents even existed. Further, the mediation confidentiality agreement that bans use of the negotiations at trial was also thrown in. The board would not waive the privilege and refused discussion of the matter. No further action was taken.
Yeah, this email raises a lot of issues, Eric. So I don't know. Let's see. Where should we begin first? Well, first off, not every letter an attorney writes to the association is an attorney-client privilege communication. Here is exactly what the statute defines as an attorney-client privileged document. Quote, any record protected by the lawyer-client privilege as described in Section 90.502 of the Florida statutes and any record protected by the work product privilege, including a record prepared by an association attorney or prepared at the attorney's express direction, which reflects a mental impression, conclusion, litigation strategy, or legal theory of the attorney or the association, and which was prepared exclusively for civil or criminal litigation or for adversarial administrative proceedings, or which was prepared in anticipation of such litigation or proceedings until the conclusion of that litigation or proceedings.
All right. So bottom line, and this is the example I always give at the seminars, if the board asks Scott or I to write a letter telling him how to go about waiving reserves, and we simply write the letter and we even indicate on the letter that it's an attorney-client privilege document, that still doesn't make it privileged because, again, it wasn't prepared exclusively for civil or criminal litigation or adversarial administrative proceedings. It was just, hey, how do you go about waiving reserves?
All right. So since that letter is not privileged, are you saying it can be seen by any unit owner?
Yeah, that is exactly what I'm saying, Karen. Again, not every letter prepared by the attorney for the association is privileged. And also note that what the statute specifically says, that document is no longer privileged, even assuming you have a privileged document, it's no longer privileged upon the conclusion of that litigation or the proceedings. So a document may be privileged at one moment and not privileged later on and once those proceedings are actually over with. But actually, this email that Jack wrote in also raises another interesting issue. Every once in a while when there's litigation involving a condo or an HOA, the association or that unit owner may want what's known as a confidentiality agreement, and that agreement would basically prevent the owners in the association from even knowing the terms of the settlement of a case. And believe it or not, I've seen this done. And I have to tell you, I always take the position that there is simply no way in the world that a Florida community association has the right to enter into a confidentiality agreement that doesn't let the owners know how a lawsuit involving their own money was settled. You know, I can tell you for one, I will not allow an association I represent to settle a case on those terms where there's a confidentiality agreement and the conclusion is being hid from the union owners. Not going to happen.
Yeah, Eric, there's actually this Third District Court of Appeals case, which is down in Dade County, that held that since the individual condominium unit owners are the real parties in interest, a developer was entitled to disclose to each of them in a letter privileged communications that occurred at a mediation. After a case didn't settle at mediation, the developer wrote a letter to all of the owners telling them what happened at the mediation. Now the law says that mediation proceedings are confidential, so the association filed a motion for sanctions against the developer. But the court basically took the position that the unit owners had the right to know. Again, because they are the real parties in interest. So if the owners have a right to know what happened at a mediation, they certainly are the real parties in interest. But, you know, I actually kind of disagree with that, Eric, because in the statute, it talks about how things can be privileged with at least between an attorney and the client until the end of the litigation. Okay. By making all proceedings that involve a condominium association an open book to third parties, it kind of really puts the association in a bad, you know, light. Now, backs them into a corner. Now, I have no problem with, you know, people being able to disclose what happened at mediation subsequent to the trial. But once there's still an issue in play, you know, that can really affect the parties that are litigating.
All I'm saying is that, and the Third District Court agreed, the people that attend the board of the board members that actually go to that mediation, they're not the only parties in interest to those proceedings. It's not just the board members. The court made it a point to say, wait, they're really just the representatives of the real parties in interest. They have a right to know what's going on.
Yeah, I understand that, Eric. But like, let's say you own stock in GE. Well, if the corporate officers enter into settlement discussions over a lawsuit at GE, it's affecting my interest if I own a lot of shares, but I have no say in what's going on. What's the difference?
Right, understood. But at least for now, GE doesn't own any condominiums, at least down here in South Florida.
Who knows? They own. They make everything.
Yeah. All right. Okay. Where are we?
Like Karen always says.
we not only take your calls, but we also take your emails. And as I said before the break, I got the best one ever this week. And in fact, I asked the guy who sent it in for permission to discuss it on the air, and he did give me permission. But you know what? It looks like we're going to have to take a break.
Okay,
and we'll leave
tease.
Everybody and with a little bit of suspense. I promise you, this one is funny. And for you married men out there, you definitely want to stay tuned to this one. So give us a call here in the studio, 877-850-8585. Again, 877-850-8585. And we will be back right after this.
Welcome back to the second half hour of Condo Craze and HOAs here on Big Talk 850. I'm Karen Curtis with attorneys Eric Glazer and Scott Shapiro from Glazer & Associates. We are taking your phone calls. The phone lines are open at 877-850-8585. Again, that's 877-850-8585.
All right. Before we went to the break, I was telling everybody about perhaps what might be the funniest or best email that this show has ever received or has received in quite some time. So let's get right to it. Guy writes in, I'm certainly not going to reveal his name, but he writes in and says, I want our small association of 52 homes to get this. Disapprove the application of my mother-in-law, whom I haven't spoken to in 22 years. I will have to buy the house she wants to buy, and that is okay. But will the association be sued? And I got to tell you, I really, I know my mother-in-law is listening. This has nothing to do with you, Mom. I love you dearly. I'm just talking about this guy's particular situation, not mine, okay? But you got to admire him, really, because, I mean, lots of guys would certainly lose it if their mother-in-law moved into the community. But you got to ask, how many would be actually willing to buy a condo unit right out from under their mother-in-law's nose? I mean, that's awesome, just to make sure she can't get into the community. I mean, the dedication here, the determination here, it's not only admirable, Scott, it's extraordinary. I mean, this guy may be a hero to married men everywhere. I mean, all kidding aside.
Yeah, well, despite how determined and well-intentioned this guy is, it's going to be pretty difficult to keep his mother-in-law out of the community if the association doesn't have, a right of first refusal in their declaration that allows them to find a buyer in place of his mother-in-law. In fact, if that's not in the governing documents, he either starts getting along with his mother now or he needs to move out.
Yeah, no, I agree. But if that isn't the family-friendly, warm and fuzzy story of the day, I don't know what is. On that note, why don't we go to Christy from Plantation. How are you, Christy?
My condo situation, and I'm going to get on the air, and I want to ask the lawyer a question.
Sure.
You're on the air.
So, you are.
I'm going to get on the air, and my parents are listening, and I cannot have a screaming baby. Because she ate dunce already.
She doesn't know she's on the air.
Okay, Christy, this is funny, actually. But, Christy, you're on the air. Now we all know
you have
a screaming baby.
Oh, yes, I have a screaming baby. Yes, my husband watches the baby. Hi, oh, my gosh.
Okay, you're on.
How can we help you? I called you a few months ago, actually, about a situation. But here's the situation. I lived in a condo for 9 years, and I sold the condo because I had a crazy neighbor that was harassing me and my family. She lived below me. I had a tile floor, and the baby dropped toys on the floor, and then she told the association, and they wanted me to rip up my tile, and I had proof from the previous owner that there was noise abatement put. In fact, he installed tile for a living, but it wasn't good enough for them. They wanted me to rip it up, and I got a letter from an attorney that I'm grandfathered in. The tile was put in before there was any rules. So basically, they were upset that they lost and I won. And at that time, just before the meeting, I had found a buyer for my condo and I moved away. And now the situation is, when I sold the condo at the closing, I noticed something very strange, that there was a special assessment for almost $800 at the bottom of the closing statement, and I was very confused. And I had never, you know, known about it, really. And what it was two people that didn't want to get rid of their propane tanks, two owners in my phase one, because they didn't want to get rid of their tanks and it's a hazard, the association said, well, we're going to have to take out a $30,000 insurance policy for possible loss of life and damage to the buildings if these propane tanks blow up. So there was this possible assessment that was going to be possibly assessed. I had my closing at the end of April, and I had never gotten any payment tickets in the mail or anything. There was something posted up on the board that this might be coming, but we had never heard anything final about it. So in the end, and there also was a roof assessment coming up, which I asked a current owner who still lives there, and that hasn't even been assessed yet either. So no special assessments at all since April, and now it's July. So long story short, the title company offered to hold the check for, like, they held it for 3 weeks until they couldn't get a proper statement from the management company about what this was about and everything, and proof that it was really an assessment. So they ended up just, they didn't want to deal with it anymore. They turned over the check to the management company, so I decided to sue the management company. So long story short, I went to small claims court. Unfortunately, I didn't really know who to sue. Should I sue the association? Should I sue the management company, or should I sue the people who own the management company?
Oh, there's another hold on. There might be another person to sue in there, and that's who was holding the escrow check. Because why did they release those funds to the management company? But here's the bottom line, Christy, because we got to move on. But the bottom line is, all boils down to me, and these situations come up all the time, and it boils down to whether or not that special assessment was actually properly posted and properly passed with 14-day notice to the unit owners, and did all of that occur prior to your closing or not? And if it did not occur, then I don't believe that's a charge that should have been on your closing statement. Had it occurred prior to the actual closing, then determining who pays it is a matter of what's in your real estate contract between the buyer and the seller, and that happens all the time. But, Christy, thank you so much for the call. But let's get back, again, taking your calls at 877-850-8585. Again, 877-850-8585. Let's talk about a real interesting case out of New Jersey that's real relevant now at this time of the year because of the fact that election season is now in full swing, and the name of the case is called Mazdabrook HOA versus Kahn. And here's what the case is about. The plaintiff, Mazdabrook Commons Homeowners Association, it manages a common interest community in which, again, individual owners agree to certain common rules and restrictions for the benefit of the entire group, you know, typically a formal, obviously a condominium, a homeowners association. And the rules and regulations of the community bar signs except as provided in the declaration, like for sale signs and things of that nature. And the defendant lived in a planned townhouse community which was managed by Mazdabrook Commons. And in 2005, this guy decided to run for the Parsippany Town Council. And he posted two signs in support of his candidacy at his private residence, one inside the window of the townhouse and another inside the door. And Mazdabrook then notified him that these signs violated the association's rules, and they ordered that he take these signs down, even though he's the one that's running. And Mazdabrook's regulations banned all residential signs except, like we said, for sale signs. And upon review, the Supreme Court looked at this, and they balanced really what was the minimal interference, what they thought was with Mazdabrook's private property interest, against this guy's free speech rights to put up these political signs on his own property. And what did the court do? The court found that the sign policy in question violated the free speech clause of the state constitution, so he was allowed to keep those signs up.
Yeah, they probably got it right there. You know, in America, you'd certainly think we have the right to publicly display our support for a candidate. even if the sign we use is, you know, clashes with the color scheme of the HOA.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
Let's do this. Let's take our final break of the hour and taking your calls at 877-850-8585. Again, 877-850-8585. When we get back, we'll talk about how a case of this nature might go down in the state of Florida. We'll be back right after this.
Segment of Condo Craze and HOAs here on Big Talk 850. Give us a call at 877-850-8585, 877-850-8585. I'm Karen Curtis with attorneys Eric Glazer and Scott Shapiro taking your phone calls. Don't be afraid.
All right. Before we went to the break, we were talking about a case out of New Jersey where a guy who was running for town council in the community that he lived in actually put up signs that promoted his candidacy. The HOA tells him, take it down. Case winds up going to the Supreme Court of New Jersey, and the Supreme Court rules in favor of this guy's First Amendment rights to put these signs up and leave them there. And the question is really, you know, how does Florida treat people putting up signs urging people to vote for a particular candidate? And, you know, how would this case of this nature actually turn out in this state? And I don't know of any specific Florida case on this issue here in Florida. But interestingly enough, the Florida Condominium and Homeowner Association statutes, they do in fact talk about exercising your political rights. And obviously this is pretty important this time of year with the presidential election coming up.
Hey, Eric, yeah. I'm sorry to interrupt you. I just read a really disturbing story here on the Sun Sentinel, just posted a few minutes ago.
Yeah.
It says Miami police said they're hunting down a gunman right now, is driving around and firing randomly at people in Miami. He's apparently wounded three people already.
Really?
Yeah, it's a little short story here. It says he's a guy's been identified as a 23-year-old. The story states the gunman was identified as 23-year-old Aaron Cash, a Miami man wanted for attempted murder. So, I mean, this just posted a few minutes ago.
It doesn't say what part of Miami it's happening.
Doesn't say what part of Miami. So.
Well, for those of you that are listening in Miami, maybe you want to keep track of the news. And just kind of keep your heads up and your eyes open, okay? Just be careful out there. I tell you, you keep reading. I know we're off the topic here, but ever since the Batman massacre last week, you see all these copycat cases that are coming out since then? It's like the world is freaking out since that first one. I saw the movie last week. Even sitting in the movie theater there, you can see everybody's a little bit on edge.
Yes.
And it's kind of looking to their neighbors to the left and right and seeing if you know, they're on the ball or not.
Can you imagine sitting there and you think it's part of the movie?
Of the movie.
Because people thought it was someone coming in as part of the movie.
Absolutely horrible. All right, so heads up again if you live in Miami. If something comes through, we get an update before the show is up, we will certainly pass it on to you. But as we were saying, I don't know about any specific Florida case on this issue here in Florida. But again, the condo and HOA statutes, they do protect some of your political rights during this time of year. And here's what the statutes actually say. No entity or entities shall unreasonably restrict any unit owner's right to peacefully assemble or right to invite public officers or candidates for public office to appear and speak in common elements, common areas, and recreational facilities. So, you know, it's pretty clear to me that there's certainly a strong public policy here in Florida toward allowing freedom of speech, especially political speech. And perhaps if a similar case wound up here in Florida, I don't think it would surprise me one bit if a court would rule that any provision of a condo or HOA deck that prohibits these signs that promotes endorsement of candidates, perhaps that's also unconstitutional here as well.
Yeah, you know, Eric, a lot of our clients, a lot of our older condos and HOAs that we represent, a lot of their decks restrict stuff like this from going on in, like, the clubhouse, like, no political parties, no religious parties. But my favorite one always was no secret societies. You see that in a lot of them. But apparently that's all banned by the statute. But keep in mind, though, that in New Jersey, it was decided 2-1, and the judge that dissented felt very strongly that if you moved into a community with a restriction in place, as a matter of contract law, you were bound by that restriction. And we're also pretty big on contract law down here, so who knows how it would turn out, Eric.
Yeah, interesting case. So, you know, it's funny, Scott, you made that analogy a minute ago. You and I both know somebody who became a citizen of the United States last week.
Yes.
And it's funny because here we're talking about the right to, you know, your political rights and your right to free speech and stuff. And this guy that we know
Great friend of the show, Cruz, Body by Cruz.
Right.
Come on.
Exactly. And he was actually asked to – they give you an application when you become a citizen. And one of the questions that they ask you right up to the very moment was, believe it or not, it, basically something to the effect like McCarthyism. It was, are you now or have you ever been a member of the Communist Party? Believe it or not, even today that question is asked of you on your application to become a citizen of the United States. Hmm. So not all of your political rights, I guess, can you express under the First Amendment, you know. But, yeah, we still don't want commies perhaps in the country. And steps are made sure to make sure that that doesn't happen. But all right, how about we answer an email? And we actually got a real interesting question this week from a community association manager who works in Pembroke Pines, asking, this comes up all the time too, if a verbal resignation of a board member is actually valid. Okay, someone, you know, screams out and says, I can't take it anymore, I quit. And I researched some arbitration cases, and I was only able to find one case that even talks about it.
I had to do some research on the last time you actually did some research. But apparently you got the hit the nail on the head here, Eric. And in that case, the arbitrator held that when an arbitrator reviewed an audio tape of a board meeting and concluded that the board member gave a clear verbal resignation, which was accepted, and the fact that the resignation was given in the context of an animated, quarrelsome portion of the board meeting does not detract from the intent of that individual to resign from a board.
All right. So I guess all those people who scream and yell at board meetings that they have had enough and they're quitting the board better mean it when they say it.
Yeah, absolutely, Karen, because, again, according to this opinion, it makes no difference whatsoever if you say it in the heat of the moment. If you say you resign, you are gone. All right, so keep that in mind, everybody. I know the pressure can sometimes get to you, but before you utter that statement, I quit, just make sure you don't want to come back.
Yeah, okay. Here's another email. Mike writes and asks, Eric, HOA posting of meetings on Clubhouse bulletin board, which is gated and access card is required. Would that be okay? Reason, if past due residents are shut off to access to the clubhouse, they have no way of knowing about the meetings, and can the board deny access to HOA meetings because of being over 90 days past due?
Good question.
This is a good question. I got to tell you, this comes up. I just want to make sure everybody understands the nature of the question. As we know, the statutes allow you, the association with delinquent unit owners to prevent them from using certain common areas of the condominium or HOA if they're delinquent in their assessments. Now, suppose, however, that the areas that they're being restricted from, that's where the notices are being posted regarding when the meetings are, and all the important information is being posted in areas that these people can't access. And I think it's really, you know, a great question. And I got to tell you, I take the position that simply posting the notice in the clubhouse in this area cannot be sufficient, absolutely not. And it would have to be posted in a place that every owner can see it, including owners who have been suspended from using the common areas.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you, Eric. But I guess an even bigger issue is whether or not an owner who gets suspended from using the common areas is prevented from attending a board meeting if that board meeting is on a common area.
And believe it or not, this comes up all the time too. And my answer would also be that a unit owner absolutely has a right to attend the board meetings regardless of whether or not they're in the common areas. If the legislature wanted to prevent delinquent owners from attending a board meeting, the statute could have easily said that. And again, I don't care one way or another if an owner's rights to use the common areas are suspended. He still has that right to attend that meeting.
I mean, I just want to, you know, point out that the difference between a condo and HOA is that an HOA actually owns the common areas where the condo doesn't. So the reasons that you should have for not being allowed to go on to the common areas might differ from association to association.
You know what? Before we go on to
Caroline?
Yeah, to Caroline. I think let's talk about a little bit about what's going to come up next week on the show. Actually, starting tomorrow in tomorrow's blog, we're going to spend a lot of time talking about a real interesting type of case Scott and I were involved in this week, and that is slander and libel cases involving the board of directors, the condominium association, and the unit owners. And this is often a real hot topic.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of associations out there don't like it sometimes when their unit owners point out that they might not like the job that they're doing. And remember, everybody, just because someone disagrees with you or doesn't think you're doing a great job doesn't mean they're liable for damages to you in a court of law.
Right. We'll talk about also some real interesting cases where certainly it falls under the line, you know, he doth protest too much, Scott.
If you're going to quote Shakespeare, yeah. You quote it properly.
What is it?
Well, the lady doth protest too much,
okay.
Methinks.
I think I said that, didn't yes. I? Yeah, well, Hamlet. Some interesting cases to talk about regarding libel and slander in your association starting next week and actually starting in tomorrow morning's blog at www.hoa-condoblog.com. Everybody, thanks for tuning in for another week. Speak to you again next week on Condo Craze and HOAs.